the family's on release. Joan Baez, A Pretty Boy Floyd. This is the Tater Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And I believe we're joined by Ann Charney. She's the author of Dobreed and other novels, and a very highly regarded journalist, winner of many awards. Are you there, Ann?
Yes, I am.
Hey,
good morning.
Thank you very much for talking to us. We've been on this program, but talking about this book by Peter McFarlane, Family Ties.
Yes.
How a Ukrainian Nazi and a living witness link Canada to Ukraine today. And I guess it's just serendipity, but Chrystia Freeland, who is part of our discussion.
I was going to bring that up.
seems I guess things rhyme, as they say. Yes, she's stepping down as a minister and going to become an MP, and she might run. I guess people assume she's going to run for the leadership of the Liberal Party, and I'm kind of glad of that, because for many years now, there's been a discussion that is not quite breaking the surface publicly, but it's been ongoing discussion of her grandfather, Michael Chomiak, who was undisputably a Nazi collaborator. And he's part of this book, Family Ties, focuses on him, but then also focuses on your family, your mother, your aunt, yourself. A wonderful way to tell the story. Let me just ask, we have this problem of inability of people to just talk about simple matters. Chrystia Freeland was asked about her grandfather, is it true he was a collaborator? And she did not answer. To this day, she has not answered. And I have to say, I don't take to this day anybody asked her. But I don't see how she can run for leadership this time without this becoming a question. So if I could just start this way.
Well, I think it's only a minor hindrance for her. First of all, we're living at a time when all sorts of people rise to political powers with very shady backgrounds. I don't think that she's ever acknowledged to herself in any case that her grandfather was a Nazi. And it's not a subject that's talked about much in Canada, where there's a huge Ukrainian population, many of them with Nazi connections. So it's not exactly a burning issue, which is one of the reasons why Peter's book is so welcome, because he brings up that story and documents it with impeccable research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to my mind, it's like the question would be, why can't Canada handle the truth? And just to speak of that truth, and the wonderful way, in my opinion, Peter McFarlane, the author of the book Family Ties, brought this in was in June of 1941, Nazi Germany invaded Ukraine, the part that you were born in.
Well, it was Poland then.
Yeah, pardon me. That's, by the way, that's something I really hope that you would tell us, explain to
borders.
Us about. And so Michael Chomiak, the grandfather of Chrystia Freeland, was in Krakow, Poland. What was it then? Anyway, it was German-occupied Poland. And he was editing a paper that celebrated the invasion of Poland and said, our dreams are coming true. And what was unfolding was something that Peter McFarlane refers to as the Holocaust of bullets. And so now we know he was in Krakow, Poland. He's sort of a neighbor of yours in the sense that your home community was only some 90 miles or something from Lvov. So he was in Poland, Krakow, celebrating the Nazi invasion. Where were you?
1940?
At 41, when the invasion.
41. Well, you know, I think I was a year and a half, so I don't have much memory of that time. I know that my family remained in the city where they lived, 90 kilometers from Krakow, but they fled into the countryside once the German troops marched into the town and declared a Judenfrau, you know, that we're going to free the city of Jews. And so my mother, my aunt, and I, and accompanying my mother, fled to a hiding place they had prepared in the countryside by a Ukrainian woman, as a matter of fact, who lived on a farm. And they had created built a loft, or within the loft they had created shelter. And, of course, they paid for that security with whatever money they had left until the last day.
Well, yes, and by the way, you wrote a wonderful book, which translated, by the way, to several languages, Dobried, and of course this is Anne Charney we're speaking to, and you were close actually to dying. It strikes me when I read it, I don't know how much longer you would have lasted if the war had not turned dramatically and the Soviet army arrived.
Yes, well, you know, not only were we physically in danger, but the money had run out. And the Ukrainian woman who provided us with little bits of food at night, because it was only safe to come to the barn at night, was stopping to come because there was no more money to give her. And so one of the stories I heard is that the women removed their wedding rings and gave them to her. And so that continued until the Russian army entered to liberate that area, and which put an end to the ordeal. Well, the beginning of the ordeal.
What happened there, I wish the world would, I hope everybody reads the book, I hope it's reprinted and circulates more. I often think of Farley Mowat writing over and over again, damn this Cold War, because we became separated from an ally who had actually delivered the greatest blows against Nazi Germany.
Of course.
And then, so because of the Cold War, you are treated as guilty of being rescued by the wrong army, right?
Yes, and it made it very difficult for me to publish my book because the hero who liberates the prisoners or the people, refugees hiding from the Germans, should not be a Soviet officer. That was just not politically acceptable at the time. And I had to go to many, many publishers, and also many of Canadian writers intervened on my behalf. And then finally I got it published. But the moment it started being translated in other countries, it became much easier to get attention for the book. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, we also could not come to Canada because of that, because, you know, the famous book, None Is Too Many. Well, Jews were not exactly welcomed with open arms. And whereas the refugees from Ukraine, immigrants from Ukraine, were welcomed in great numbers. So in the early 1950s, my family had a visa from Poland to New York. It was a visa that lasted 3 months. But they knew they couldn't return to Poland. So during that time, they asked for political asylum and many countries and were turned down, including Canada. And so it was through a whole procedure of subterfuge that we finally came to Canada and became Canadian citizens.
Actually, yes, through the brilliant and courageous efforts of your mother, I read it, she seemed to be able to handle really difficult problems. As her and her sister.
Yes. Well, there was 20 years difference between them. My mother was 20 years younger than her older sister. Mm-hmm. And so it was an interesting relationship. But, you know, my mother was extremely intelligent and very brave. But what got us to New York out of Poland was the fact that a member of their family was a Supreme Court judge in the Court of New York. And so he was able to obtain a visa for his family from Poland for 3 months. It couldn't be longer than that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we were in New York, but we were desperately looking for an asylum somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it was,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I just said, fortunately, it worked out in the end.
Yeah. Now, by the way, this was a matter of years. You went through many difficult experiences in Europe, different capitals, and going from hotel to hotel or family to family, and trying to stay alive, because post-war Europe was not a happy place to be trying to just stay warm and fed, right?
Well, it was pretty wonderful for me because we were out of hiding. And as I say at the beginning of the book, I didn't know that there was another world outside of the barn. So it was pretty exciting discovering. The other thing that happened is when we were liberated by the Russians, that part of Poland that my family came from was annexed to the Soviet Union. But the Russians gave the citizens there a choice. If you remained, you became Soviet. Or if you wanted to remain Polish, they shipped us out to the new territories that had been annexed from Germany. Hmm. So my family and I went straight to a town that had been called in German Breslau, and now in the new Poland became Wrocław. So that's really where I lived until we came to New York and then Montreal.
Yeah. Just one last question on the circumstances. I found it very poignant, and I think it was very... I really appreciate that you wrote this story, a memoir, as Peter MacFarlane says, with some additions. From the child's point of view, so that you had this kind of wonderful temperament, and of course your aunt and your mother were encouraging it, that you didn't know how fearful the situation was, and you were seeing what you were seeing.
Right. That was been noted by most of the critics in other countries where the book was translated, in France and Germany, Sweden, was just that it was such a different rendering of that particular experience, children in wartime. And that was my main motivation in writing, because I could not find myself in all of the usual what are called Holocaust memoirs. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to tell my own story. But I also wanted to be a writer. I'd always wanted to be a writer, and I just moved on from that book to others.
Is it true that you were inspired by Anna Green Gables?
I read it already. I was reading, but then, yes, it was in Polish. And,
in Polish?
Yes, of course. I read it in Polish. I didn't know any English until I came to Montreal, English or French. Yes, I read it, and of course, I certainly could not resist the story of a young girl who dreams of becoming a writer. That was my...
And so was you.
So I was thrilled the first time I went to Prince Edward Island, many years later, believe me.
I like this combination. You were inspired by Anna Green Gables. You go to school, you develop English and French, which makes us all swoon. You did this starting from Polish, and you end up studying Marcel Proust, and you're affected. Your approach to writing, there's a word that is used, I want you to talk about distance. You achieve a kind of distance so that you're not trying to wring out a melodrama of a life.
No.
Talk
no,
about
I don't,
that.
I don't like, well, I don't feel comfortable with that kind of writing. I don't trust it. I'm suspicious of it because it's a writer who's manipulating readers, and I don't want to do it. I want the force of the experience rendered as modestly as possible to move the readers, and because those are the kind of books that affected me the most. It's not melodramas. It's where the beauty of the writing and the discipline of the writing is what conveys the message most effectively, and so that was my model.
Yeah, and the book is Dobried, by the way. And I know it's in some of the libraries here. I hope everybody gets it. Now, Peter MacFarlane, in his book Family Ties, bless his heart, and thank God for a courageous publisher, by the way, who brought this book out.
Yes, yes, felicitations to him, yes.
Yeah.
James Lorimer.
And if Christian's going to run for leadership, everybody has to read Family Ties to decide how they wish to vote. Now, as we just mentioned, you went through, first of all, you were brought back to, You came out of the barn. You went into the what was left of the city. Mm-hmm. The 9,000 Jewish residents were gone.
Yes.
And only 88 people survived. Then you go through this years of trying to get out of Europe, and your mother wisely wanted to get somewhere out completely away from there. At the same time, according to Peter McFarlane's book, I think it's well documented, Michael Chomiak, grandfather of Chrystia Freeland, had a rather easy time of it. He retreated with the Germans. He went in back into Germany, and then they all surrendered, and he and U.S. and Canadian intelligence, British, they're all complicit, by the way, handled their being brought to Canada.
Yeah, they were scooped up as a treat for the Western countries because they were anti-communists. Better to be pro-fascist than communist. So that's the side that the Western countries picked.
The Canadian author, name escapes me, who wrote None Is Too Many, or One, I forget the title, but he said that if you had an SS marker in your armpit, you had a better chance of than anybody else of coming to Canada.
Than if you had a concentration camp number, for example.
You know, but
sure.
they must have been, by the way, in a very like a pre-war mindset to bring Nazis. They were thinking of using them in combat or to help combat against the Soviet Union.
No, they were using them in intelligence that they wanted to know. Well, first of all, if somebody was a fascist, it means that they would be loyal but being anti-communist. So this was the kind of population that they wanted to bring over and to, you know, replenish the ranks of Canadians who probably had vague ideas about communism or fascism for the most part. So it was a desirable population from their point of view, and that's what happened.
Yeah, they built what Peter McFarlane calls Fortress Edmonton.
Yeah, exactly.
There is a bust of Shukevich, who is a bona fide war criminal, in Edmonton at their Ukrainian school.
I was really interested to read about that in Peter's book because even I, who have many links to this story, did not know the extent or the prevalence of worship of Ukrainian past, and the role of Ukrainians during the war. And so, but Peter documents it very well. But, you know, there's a Duchesne report which has alludes to that, and that has great trouble being released. So, you know, can one be surprised?
It's all a surprise because there's been no journalism, frankly, of the type that you used to do. Where are our muckraking journalists? Well, I guess we can now say Peter McFarlane and Family Ties is an example, but all Canadians should have known this. And all this is kind of what I guess Orwell or somebody calls memory erasure. Here we had Mr. Hunka, Yaroslav Hunka, at 99, receiving the unanimous applause of the Canadian Parliament.
Oh, it was a wonderful moment. I loved it because I knew what Peter was writing. And I thought the timing, again, was fortuitous the way our conversation today is on the day where Chrystia Freeland resigned.
Mm-hmm. This thing of the way they have tried to bury it. It seems to me it's one of those things that it's what they say, the tongue turns always to the aching tooth. They've created an aching tooth, and it's going to have to be talked about how this happened of bringing Nazis here, and is there ever going to be a public accounting? I should ask you along with that, what was your mother's reaction? I know she became aware that, like Mr. Donstorff, I think his name is, was actually in Montreal same time as her.
Who was in Montreal? I'm sorry.
What's his name? Donstorff? Maybe I'm getting his name right. Wrong. I'm going to call him Western Ukrainian author, who celebrated the Holocaust, thought it was wonderful, ended up teaching in Montreal, I believe, or at least treated as a literary lion in Canada. Mm-hmm. And your mother was aware of that. What was
it? I'm not aware of whether she was aware of it.
I think in McFarland's book, she says, how can it be that it's easier for the Nazis to get in here than me, mm-hmm. their victim?
Well, you know, there was injustice all over the place. And you know, but what could she do? She tried to make the best of circumstances, but never changed her principles or ideas, you know. And she kept very distant from both the Polish community and the Ukrainian community, because the Polish community here were people who mostly came before the war. Mm-hmm. So there were very few who were sympathetic to the liberation of that part of the world by the Russian army.
Yeah.
And she just kept very distant from them and, you know, had her own interests.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Anne Charney, author of Dobreed, which everyone should get a copy of this, a memoir of her experience of being part of a community that was actually wiped out with only 88 survivors. I know you have speculated, and everybody should, about why it would be that Chrystia Freeland would, to this moment, not speak directly to the question about her grandfather, which would be rather simple to do. Nobody's saying she'd committed any of these crimes. That was her grandfather. But her inability to speak to it, and I believe you said in Peter McFarland's book, Family Ties, that she hopes to redeem her grandfather. Did I get that right?
Well, I can't remember what I said at the time. It's pretty close, but I think Peter wondered why she had not come out and admitted the sort of shameful record that he carried. And I said it was because she loved him. And it's very difficult, you know, love forgives so much. So if you love your grandfather or any member of your family, you're not going to go around broadcasting the shameful events in which they participated.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's almost unnatural to expect her to come forward and tell the story of her grandfather. You know, but I think that it behooves the rest of us to uncover that and advertise it as much as possible, because he's symbolic of what Canada did, Canada's attitude to both fascism and communism.
Yes.
And what sort of horrible mistakes it led to.
As far as I know, she's never actually said that she considers a Bandera. She's never said that they were criminals.
No,
she had her picture taken holding that flag, the black and red flag, which, as I understand, stands for blood and soil, a classic fascist outlook. And she's never said, oh, I shouldn't have done that.
No, because I don't think that she can admit to herself, much less to the country, that this belongs to her past or her family or her blood.
Yeah, it's inescapable in terms of, well, what is your outlook if you're addressing a politician, if she wishes to run? There's a second issue is what is it about the Canadian media that they all know to be mum on this subject?
I think you're being too harsh on Canadian media. I think that, you know, no, seriously, I mean, you know, I did many stories, not about Ukrainians, but about other unwelcome presences in Canada for Saturday Night when I wrote for them. But it has to be something that people care about or talk about. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I wrote about the terrorists in Quebec because that was something that was in the news.
Mm-hmm.
Who these days cares about, you know, the backgrounds of the people that emigrated to Canada in the 40s. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think only people who are directly affected, like, you know, the fact that the Jews were not allowed to enter the country or a very small number, whereas the Ukrainians were welcomed with open arms, that's something that's residual in some people's memories or knowledge, but even they do not make much ado about it. So mm-hmm. I think it's the normal flow of society, memory, history, and I do not take Canadians harshly for that. I think if someone was actually, like Peter, who wrote this book, may reawaken some sense of injustice about the whole story.
It is getting wider and wider attention. I'm really glad of that.
Me too.
The I'll try my own theory on you. She also, of course, is a member. Her political power has to be rooted in that community. And by the way, I guess we have to say, they're not representatives of Ukraine. This is a region called Galicia, right? The great majority of Ukrainians.
They're pretty representative of Ukraine because I have Ukrainian friends here. And they still cannot, when they speak of their friends, I say, well, are they Russian or where did they come from? She says, no, they're Jewish. They don't distinguish citizenship according to place of birth, but according to ethnicity, which is not a proof of their own anti-Semitism. It's just of the anti-Semitic practices that continue in that part of the world.
Peter points out in his book that 40,000 Canadian Ukrainians fought in the war against Hitler, and the great majority of Ukrainians fought against Hitler. So why are we celebrating or permitting this group to call themselves the Ukrainians?
Well, because they're better organized. Really, that's what it's always about, you know?
Well, I really do appreciate it. Anne Charney, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
I hope we could talk further
about this, because I think this is my Christmas work. I want everybody to buy that book, and I want everybody to buy your book, Dobrid.
And I'm so grateful to you for doing it for Peter's book.
Yeah.
And for mine as well, of course. Thank you. This has been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very, very much. Anne Charney. Bye-bye. This is the Tater Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and probably some Dylan or something, but we're on our way out of here. Pedro, thank you.